fighting fear. It's the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny.
Welcome to a very special, very early edition of Film Fight Club.
A very special, special of Film Fight Club.
A very Star Wars and holiday, a very Star Wars holiday special.
That's good morning, Sydney!
Yes, this is Star Wars Fight Club.
Star Wars, the original, is a Vietnam War analogy, so that was a very well-placed reference, some might say. Combined with World War II, combined with a bunch of other things.
Yeah, this was not.
Does not care about the franchise as much. And thank you, Chris, for acknowledging that I made a very clever reference to it.
In case you're wondering what the hell's going on now, this is Glenn Falcon, Cyber Falcon Screen, Chris, Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans, and freelance writing critic Virat Nehru. We will be with you till 4 a.m. We have literally just walked off the midnight screening of Star Wars with the crowd you kind of want to see Star Wars with, and we're going to be giving you...
The nerds. Yeah, it was scary.
I've never seen that kind of fandom in real life before, and I was actually terrified.
I was very impressed with some of them.
It was just a bunch of people dressed very well.
I'd never seen people come out and dress for a movie screening. It's just a movie in the end.
Force Awakens, they came out. Not Last Jedi so much.
You've got to do a midnight screening once just to see it.
Okay, yeah. Well, I did it. We survived.
And we've done it. So we're giving you our unfiltered, spoiler-free discussions about The Rise of Skywalker. Now, we haven't looked at the internet. We don't know what anyone said.
We don't know what the general reaction is. And we famously often get out of step with what the masses think. Because, you know, as I said in the episode we aired earlier tonight, I came out thinking everyone would love The Last Jedi. How wrong was I?
Yeah, so...
Because we're edgy and alternative.
Yeah. Now, we will be talking about spoilers in the new year, once everyone's had a chance to see it. This is a spoiler-free discussion. It'll be up on the podcast later, along with some other coverage we're doing on Boxing Day surrounds films. So we're going to talk about The Rise of Skywalker. We're not going to talk about the plot of the film beyond the first 5 minutes, i.e. the first scene and the crawl.
Yeah, we'll spoil that much, but there's stuff relating to plot materials that have already been revealed in the marketing. But in case you've been avoiding that, we think that the setup of a movie is fair game.
Yeah, well, our general rule is nothing happens in the first 10 or 15 minutes as a spoiler. We're limiting it here to the first 5 minutes. In the first, so the basic setup of this film, it takes place a little bit after The Last Jedi. We are told that there's been a broadcast from the Emperor, Emperor Palpatine, which has gone out across the galaxy. Everyone is searching for them. And we see in the opening scene that Palpatine somehow is about.
He's back.
He's back. And he has a pretty impressive collection of toys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which he may use to wreak havoc on, well, everyone. The galaxy, and all, he's just been slowly accumulating this over, God, since what, Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, Snoke was his creation, we're told. He was actually behind it all. Yeah, he basically, he says, I created Snoke, and he's been in the shadows. Everything that's been happening all along was actually the Emperor. Okay, when I heard about this in the trailers, my first reaction was, this is stupid. But I was hoping that there would be a good explanation for it. They cop out on that hard.
There isn't. There's no explanation for how
they literally say
doing this.
Yeah, they literally say the Emperor is somehow back. That's the explanation. That somehow the Emperor is back. How did they think this was acceptable? It's such a stretch to bring back the guy who died so spectacularly and created like a force explosion at the core of a space station that all exploded. He fell down a large shaft, created an explosion, and then blew up again. But he's back.
It feels like such, as a lot of this film is, such an attempt at fan service and placating the people who were upset by The Last Jedi. I had mixed views, and I've since come around to being more of a fan of it. But this is very, the whole film, in many respects, is very much designed to reach, to be generally acceptable to both sides of the Star Wars divide that was, I think, created or just brought about
the problem
by The Last Jedi coming about.
The problem of corporate filmmaking. You've got to please everyone and never take an interesting stance. Disney's Star Wars, you know, yeah, Lucas's movies were really bad, but at least
Phantom Menace had redeeming quality.
Doubled down. He went after what he wanted and took it at Star Wars in some weird directions.
And the world building was great. There's not a lot of world building here.
Well, Yeah, I'm going to get back to the Palpatine thing in just a moment, but I'm not going to say that Lucas's prequels were good, but something that they had going for them is if you turned the music off, he really had some great imagination going on between him and his artists in sketching out, taking Star Wars in different directions. Like, what J.J. Abrams keeps doing is, like, another Tatooine, or, like, familiar Star Wars environs, yeah, whereas,
this was a loud film. I think that's the other thing, you're right.
On George Lucas's series, it's very enlightening.
So, what were you saying?
The Richard Brody piece on George Lucas's Star Wars, it's very enlightening.
I'll give it a read. But yeah, he went with some really interesting designs for planets, and he was clearly trying to expand the universe and imagine new, cool sci-fi ideas.
There are moments at the very beginning of the film where we get a glimpse of what at that sort of scale, but
it rarely happens.
Really eventuate throughout the movie.
What were you saying about the...
So, like, part of the problem with this film is everything is almost foreshadowed with really loud music. And yeah. I think what J.J. Abrams does, maybe that's his signature style, is, like, everything needs to be turned up to 11.
The intensity of, like...
Yeah.
Rah, rah, rah.
And that really annoyed me because I was trying to really hard to sleep. So, yeah. You know, I wanted to...
So, the midnight screening with all that's been going on for Virat turned out to be too much for him. So, full disclosure, he slept for a good chunk of the film. But we spoke to him afterwards, and I think he has the general impression.
Yeah, because anyone who's seen The Force Awakens can get a pretty good idea of... And other J.J. Abrams, good idea of your style of filmmaking. It follows
And
the,
also, the plot's pretty simple.
Yeah, the mystery box style. We saw in The Force Awakens how there was a map, which only one person had to need the piece from it. And there is
it's
not
like that.
A similar thread running through this, which if you unpack it even a little, doesn't make much sense
no,
at all.
It's a story
it's
about
just very loosely tying the film together.
We've got to grab this MacGuffin that takes us to this planet for this action scene, where there'll be another MacGuffin that takes us to this place, and we've got to rescue this guy and whatever.
It's a treasure hunt, but in a film that is trying to be sincere and trying to bring you along on this journey, which in a kid's movie where you don't really have to think about that stuff, it works. But Star Wars such a lore and inbuilt fandom
George
and
Lucas,
knowledge that you need that integrity in the storytelling, which is really absent here.
George, I mean, the truth is, Star Wars, at its best, is a really good kid's movie. George Lucas has always maintained that Star Wars should be accessible to kids and overall is a kid's movie. I think he's right. This, especially with this one, to me, this is not more complicated than like Harry Potter or something.
The comparisons with Harry Potter are curious. We can get to those.
Midway through the movie, I was saying to someone else who was watching it, like, is it just me or is this just like Harry Potter more than Star Wars?
And she
said, yep.
It had the what made the elements of The Force Awakens and more of The Last Jedi interesting is that it toyed with the idea of it isn't simply black and white, light and dark. And while the Kylo Ren Rey arc, which we also see throughout this film, was my favorite part of it, my favorite part of this whole trilogy, separate to that, it had very black and white ideas of the dark side of the Force, light side of the Force. And
absolutely.
That dichotomy was just, you saw it in the original series, it was fine, but we want more nuance in storytelling today. And for the most part of the film, accepting the two main players' arc
but
was not there.
We, as in us three in this room talking to you now, want more nuance in storytelling today, but do the general public? Avengers Endgame is smashed all records, and it had the dumbest big bad villain.
Of course the general public want nuance. I mean, you said earlier tonight, Marriage Story.
You're right.
Also with Adam Driver, people are seeking out better
you're
storytelling.
Right. You're right.
They do want it.
But the question is, you know, especially with franchises like this, which have such fandom behind them, I think it's difficult to balance expectations around trying to do something different versus actually trying to please the fans. This film really struggled with that.
People rebelled in a big way against The Last Jedi.
Which was the most interesting film out of the
that's
three
right.
of them.
To me,
yeah, absolutely. It's the best film by far
by
out of all
a good
three.
Margin. Okay, going back to what you were saying about like good and evil just then, I was thinking as I watched this that like I want to see at least something of a if you're going to present these big, bad, evil forces, I want to see just something of a meditation on those themes. Like, you know, I'm not saying, you know, that they need to be super dark, shades of gray, complicated or something, but I'd like to see some kind more of a hint at like what drives them beyond just like that they're evil and they want to do evil things and rule the galaxy to do evil. Like, do they want to rule the galaxy because of ego? Like Kylo Ren in Force Awakens at least gave sort of like the hint at that, that like this is all like an ego trip. Just something to kind of ground the idea of evil, because it's rolling back on the great thing that J.J. Abrams did in Force Awakens, which is to try to make the dark side of the Force more relatable, you know? Like,
Yeah, there's a key thing. Yeah, Palpatine is like the dark elf. We have to be clear. I'm talking about Thor 2, that terrible one. With the first two films, Kylo Ren was the main villain. And yes, yeah, he has a key role in this.
Such an interesting villain.
But that role is taken up to a large extent by the presence of Palpatine, who is such an all-encompassing
That's
figure.
Right.
So you have simply good and evil versus, as opposed to someone struggling with good and someone, oh, wait a minute, Kylo Ren. What side, well, we saw in The Last Jedi,
yeah, what side is he
actually on?
Yeah, okay.
Which you get a bit of here, but it's overtaken by, you know, classic Voldemort.
Yeah. Two things about Palpatine. One, I think the reason, it's just so frustrating. I think the reason why he's in here is if you looked at The Last Jedi, it's 3 a.m., tired. If you look at The Force Awakens, Snoke was being set up as the big bad by J.J. Abrams, and he was just clearly a fanservice-y echo of the Emperor. There's this, you know, guy behind it all who's introduced as a shadowy hologram, and he's going to become more important later. Rian Johnson tried to move this series towards something new and just wrote that off. I think he correctly identified that Snoke was not interesting. It was too similar to what we'd seen before. And that the interesting thing that J.J. had set up was the Rey and Kylo dynamic. I think he tried to clear the table and say, let's just remove extraneous side plots so that the series can be focused in on that. And it feels like J.J. Abrams has spat the dummy because his plan of having the big Emperor Snoke at the end has been foiled. So let's just bring back the original Emperor, and I don't even have a reason why. I don't have an explanation. I just want that to be in the movie, and you're going to take it because this is what I want.
Okay, the Rey-Kyle dynamic's great. We'll get more to that later.
But on the Emperor.
On the Emperor, yes. So when we talked about The Last Jedi a couple of years back, my major criticism then, it's less of a criticism now because it did take the series in interesting ways, is how Johnson consigned so many arcs in the original film to dramatic irrelevance. J.J. Abrams doubles down on that, but more problematic is that it's a reversion to what we've seen before. We feel like we're going backwards.
Yeah.
This is a big problem. The whole film, it feels like he just wants to ignore aspects of The Last Jedi and suddenly, oh, I had this idea. I have to account for what was in The Last Jedi, but now I want to tell my story. And it's not entirely your story anymore.
Case in point, Palpatine. What you were saying before about how The Last Jedi, it brought out this idea of where Luke Skywalker says, you know, I've been thinking, it's not just about good and evil, it's about balance, and that those ideas are maybe too simple and something we should try to move beyond. It's almost like a meta fourth wall breaking moment of him trying to make Star Wars more morally and philosophically interesting. Without turning his back on the kind of like elemental good and evil thing, but it's part of the process of deepening it. I think it was I actually think a lot of people say that Last Jedi was just turning its back on Force Awakens, but I think in a way it was deepening the best things about Force Awakens. Getting back to the Emperor, right? As you say, that we had an interesting villain of Kylo Ren in the first two films, because Kylo Ren is someone who you would actually potentially turn for, right? Like because Adam Driver has shirtless scenes and gets to have sexual tension and stuff, and also gets to show more shades of gray and some good sides of his personality shining through, it makes believable the idea that Rey might turn to the dark side. You know, it's the central, it's like the Luke Skywalker join me thing from the original series, but it's way more believable now than it's ever been before. That like the previous two trilogies did a poor job of you know, conveying that how that turn would actually work. So now in the last movie, we just have this really, really evil big bad because he's evil, Lord Voldemort, dark wizard, robed Satan guy with pointy fingers. And it's like, there's no dramatic tension because he's not sexy like Kylo Ren. I never believe that this guy could ever convince Rey to turn to the dark side.
I mean, it's more that Driver's the best thing about this film and every film he's in. Mm. He's charismatic. And I can see him running the Knights of Ren. I can see someone saying, oh, wait a minute, being pulled over. The scene in the throne room, there's a fair argument. He makes what I think is a fair argument, but at least a compelling argument. Someone in that circumstance would be compelled to listen to it. On the matter of the thematic switch within the series, I agree that Last Jedi deepened elements of The Force Awakens, and one thing that Last Jedi doubled down on, which was more hinted at The Force Awakens, is the idea that anyone is special. It's not about lineage, the idea that there are Force-sensitive people, there are people out there who can engage with the Force and who can, regardless of where they quote-unquote come from, can make a difference. And certainly, the original trilogy, episodes 4, 5, and 6, dealt with this to a great extent. This film moves away from this theme. No, it's not necessarily reversion. It just looks to other thematic arcs. And that was when the film had that the redeeming parts of Canto Bight with the young children and the character played by Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
This doesn't pursue that. It just leaves it by the wayside.
Focusing so strongly on lineage makes this universe feel really small. It takes away from some of the magic and the relatability that could possibly be in Star Wars if people had the room to dream bigger. And the issue at the end of the day, like the biggest problem with this movie for me is that it, like, really, really good versus really, really evil is just not that interesting. Like, there's no, they beyond, the action has to be really well executed for that, something as simple as that to register.
And the action isn't great.
No.
The action is so crowded in the frame.
What did you think of the action?
No, actually, I think in terms of the set pieces and visual design, I think this actually does offer something really fresh and interesting.
I agree. I think that it is well designed.
But I think that's because of the comparative lack of creativity in setting up those pieces, that when the pieces do come, you're like, oh, there's something interesting happening.
Here's the bit he focused on.
You know, so it's interesting because usually our critique is like the action is boring in a lot of these films. But here the action itself and the scenes and how they're executed are very well staged, very well directed. Well, and actually there's a lot going on in terms of the psychology within those action sequences, which is more than the actual setup. I think the setup is really bad, but when the action sequences come, they're more interesting than the setup.
I think the more intimate ones had showed that kind of psychology and like backdrop and like...
Once again, I woke up at the right moment in the action sequences. Yeah, there must have been bad ones before.
There were, definitely. Early on, there's an action scene where I just thought this is just noisy. Like it's just the action's shot too close, too quick editing. And it just sort of didn't register that well. And it, like, comparable to some action in Return of the Jedi, which I think J.J. Abrams is looking to for a template, except that film, in its slower pacing and, you know, wider shots, was just more fun to watch.
I didn't like the action in this film, with the exception of the very first action sequence, which involved a chase extensively utilizing
the
hyperdrive.
That's the
where there is quite a, you see a lot of different scenarios and sequences, and that's quite entertaining. I think this film, more than any of the other Star Wars films, has a less of a focus on practical effects in the action sequences. Certainly, J.J. Abrams is someone who's well known for using special VFX, so it's not predictable. There is one sequence involving sand, which I quite enjoyed. Otherwise, the sequences weren't especially creative compared to anything else we've seen in the Star Wars universe, and were repetitive compared to what we've seen in action sequences over now several films, including returning to areas that we're familiar with and have seen and are new or exciting.
Were there any things in particular that we liked?
Well, we've talked about... I'll extend it to Daisy Ridley. I liked her in this film more.
Me too.
The dynamic with her, between her and Kylo.
She's definitely improved with each film, so I guess she's shown that promise.
Yeah, her performance was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, Star Wars involves a lot of intense emoting, and here she did it the most convincingly.
Yeah, this is the best performance to date.
Yeah.
I liked the main three, John Boyega and Oscar Isaac. They were good.
They just don't have much to do. The problem with this movie, there's a lot of problems with this movie, is that there's way too much going on. The Last Jedi is a film where a big criticism of it, the main criticism of it probably, is that too much is going on and the subplot threads take up too much time of the film and aren't well developed enough, and the main plot thread, which is the most interesting, could be more developed. I agree. The Last Jedi was 150 minutes long. This one's 140 minutes long. This has so much more going on than The Last Jedi, and it's mostly really underdeveloped. And when you consider that most of the plot is a fetch quest...
Yeah, including the bit where this is in the trailer, We meet Lando returns, Billy Dee Williams, and it's just, oh, you're suddenly here.
He is.
This is great. Good to see you, Lando.
This universe just feels small with the ways that they try to tie it all into a select few groups and people and families that have been established already, and that's a pretty bad idea if Disney want this to be a series that just generates new installments and sustains itself into the future. But there's too much going on.
There's a new, the Peter Cushing character, Moff Tarkin.
Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, there's a new Moff Tarkin too.
There's a new, of things because I guess they want to sell more toys.
Yeah. And Richard E. Grant's good, but suddenly, we just want to stand in for Moff Tarkin, so he's there. Another thing that really frustrated me about this, it frustrated me about The Last Jedi too. They've never known what to do with General Hux, Domhnall Gleeson's character. He was the best in the first film.
I thought he was used well
when
here,
he was
but not
most
enough of him.
Terrifying. In the second one, he was consigned to being thrown about rooms as a piece of comedy. Here, again, it's like Matt Damon in the Ocean's trilogy. He's a different character in each film. They're frustrated. They didn't know what to do with him. I didn't like him in this movie. We can't really talk about it too much without spoilers.
We'll talk about it next year when we do a spoiler on the podcast.
But to simply say it didn't make sense to me. It didn't pan out.
We were talking about action before, and I've been thinking since watching this half an hour ago, you know, I've been thinking long and hard. big CG action scenes are almost always when I check out. It's really hard to do them well. The one redeeming feature of James Cameron's Avatar is that the big CG action scene with a bunch of spaceships flying around, like Star Wars, like what this film tries to do and Star Wars films traditionally have, and was really good. There was a big Star Wars-esque action scene at the end of that movie where we're cross-cutting between CG spaceships shooting each other, people running around on ships, dropping bombs and stuff. And there's a very similar scene at the end of this. And I was just thinking how it actually... people underestimate what it takes to really make those scenes interesting. It's not enough to just wow us with a big CGI budget and a bunch of things going on screen anymore. You need to have the skills of an action director on a really high level. It's like a complex action scene requires complex staging, complex spatial geography, and it needs to be made fluid and exciting. And like most films that go down this path these days, I don't think this pulls it off. I don't think J.J. Abrams is a good enough director of action to make this kind of thing work.
No, I didn't like the final action sequence for the reasons that every film... and a lot of the Marvel films, and certainly The Force Awakens with Starkiller Base, feels it has to up the ante in terms of either the weaponry or what is at stake. Mm. Also, the presence of what we've seen in every film, the gimmick that we, the sky beam type intensity, it's just unnecessary. Whereas in The Last Jedi, it was very clear what the stakes were. There was a set number of the resistance who could die if the retreat was not successful. Yep. Go to the classic Dark Knight example. It wasn't about the whole city or world being destroyed. It was two ships full of people.
That's
which
right.
is a lot of people, but the stakes are confined, we know. But this felt it just had to up the ante again. And we don't need that, especially when we have characters we are familiar with
and care
dear
about.
To.
Yeah, the intimate stuff, as Virat said, is like where more of the actual psychology is coming into play. And it's relatable on a human level. As a tangent, beyond Avatar, is there any film that has pulled off this kind of large-scale CGI battle at all? Well, it's always so boring to me.
I didn't mind the end of Infinity War.
Yeah, okay, I'll grant that. Actually, I think it did it really well. By contrast, the one in Endgame was terrible.
And I would say for those fans of Star Trek Discovery, the end of Season 2, the final two episodes, handles it very well.
Haven't seen that, so I can't comment. Okay, it's so common in our action movies these days, but it's just so usually boring. You know, it's a shame. Anyway.
The small-scale action sequences, I enjoyed more.
I think people just underestimate how hard it is to do that, and they just go with it because it's the trend. I just think I wish you'd thought this through. Maybe it's just really hard to depict a battle on that scale, and people need to maybe approach it in a more abstract way, focus in on little moments that matter instead of just vomiting, exploding things onto the screen.
I mean, there was one other thing that sort of made it really difficult for me to sit through or whatever, you know, put me asleep essentially or made it a slog, was even though, like you said, J.J. Abrams has really confined his world to a few families and a few people,
yeah.
But even those relationships felt really underdeveloped.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at this point, we're in the end game now, or whatever, of this trilogy.
Yeah, we are. This is the third of the three major sagas we can include this year. The Marvel series, in a sense, Star Wars and Game of Thrones. We've seen the big three cult sections of our time include in 2019.
Logically, like, you know, you would think that the emotional kind of connections between these main relationship that you're exploring would be at its strongest.
Yes, and should
but
be
actually,
very developed
at this
by now.
Point, you know, if they feel like threadbare, thin kind of threads, and not even that, it just feels illogical. Some of the things that characters are saying and kind of feeling, I'm just like, why? Like, this is so late in the game. Why are you introducing and introducing new elements, which don't go anywhere, which is even worse.
Especially when you leave characters by the wayside who are relevant to the previous series. One of the great new characters, probably the best new character introduced in The Last Jedi, was Rose Tico. And I know she got a huge backlash.
Spoilers.
She's a standard... I don't think it's a spoiler.
No, it's not.
Her role could have been filled by any extra in this. It's pathetic that she was not given an arc in this.
It's really
closely
like,
akin to The Last Jedi. And I know there were... Okay, to the extent that this is J.J. Abrams saying, I don't want anything to do with what happened in The Last Jedi, that's terrible. But to whatever extent, it is a way to placate those who are highly critical of her presence, and that's just awful. No, her character didn't deserve this.
It could be something much more simple and much more petty than that, which is J.J. Abrams is going, I didn't create...
An ego trip?
Yeah, I didn't create this character.
Yeah, it's Rian Johnson's thing, so I'm not going to touch anything he did. I'm just going to feel like where I left off was false faking, then that should never happen. Kind of thing.
She could have been a stooge. She could have been a nameless character in this.
That's right. Yeah. I was saying that she has about as much of a role, really. She appears in more scenes, but about as much of a role as this recurring character in this trilogy who's like she's an older lady with a really interesting face who always looks really sad that the rebels are losing and reports stuff.
Those who hounded the actress who played Rose on social media will probably be.
They'll
not,
probably
not
be thrilled
with this.
But just at the end of it, okay, I'm not spoiling the movie, but it's the end of this big saga, and it just, at the end of the day, comes down to the most simple idea of good versus evil. And it's been done at the end of the Return of the Jedi, you know, that the saga comes to an end, and it's just good versus evil, and it's simple, right? I wish that you can still do a great good versus evil story, but leave some kind of theme or some kind of moral resonating. It doesn't, this beyond just resolving the story, this doesn't really at the end of the day feel like it was about anything. There's not really any sort of grand theme for you to think about in the way that it resolves. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. We were pursuing, again, as referred to earlier, the idea of everyone is special, which is a great theme for The Last Jedi. This is very much... This kind of feels like, actually, I would make the comparison. This kind of feels, yes, good, evil, black, white.
Yeah.
Here's the side you want to be on. Here's the side you don't want to be on. None of the nuance which is implied from The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens of Kylo's arc. None of the nuance which we saw with Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi. It's gone.
Yeah.
I think Kylo gets the biggest disservice because he's been set up as a very much more interesting character than he is in this film. Which is also interesting because, you know, and the prospect of Adam Driver actually, you know, tapping into something which we didn't think was there.
He's still working on levels that no one else in this film is working on.
It's just like his visual emotiveness is fantastic in this movie. Especially, and then what happens with his arc is very disappointing.
I agree. Look, it's just such a shame.
I'll disagree. We can't talk about this without spoilers. I liked the arc, but...
I actually agree with you. I liked his arc too. I just feel like it still feels disappointing in the way that it's resolved. And I guess how simple and how little... There still is a lot of it in the movie, I guess, compared to everything else, because nothing has much emphasis because this movie is so fast-paced. But I still wish there was more of it in this movie. I still wish there was more illustrating his psychology and his thought processes. That said... What is there is sometimes really good. There's a lot of fan service in this movie, but the way that this movie, when it tries to not just say, hey, remember this cool thing, but tie in those things from the past into the new context and the new characters and new themes, It does it really well. There's some nice moments like that. One in particular that
I agree.
I thought was actually.
I think we're thinking of the same thing. The one moment of fan service is actually the best scene of the film, which I feel.
It's actually like quite well executed and quite moving. And there are other points in the movie that I felt were kind of moving.
Which one are you referring to?
Well, I won't spoil this.
We're telepathically talking right
That's
now.
That's right. We're like part of Kylo the and Rey.
Yeah, we're linked. Yeah.
That said,
actually, oh yes,
and want to say that point. The Last Jedi and Force Awakens, especially Last Jedi, brought up this thing of like them kind of telepathically communicating and crossing the divides in space and time.
Yeah,
this does that too, in some actually really cool ways.
And it grants us new understandings of the Force, not overloaded entirely new like we saw with Leia in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
It just envelops a little further what we've come to know, and it's great. It's one of my favorite innovation of this whole
and
film.
Those moments seem to be like quite well directed, interesting camera movement.
And funny.
Interesting camera, funny, yes, and witty kind of use of the camera to show like the crossing between space. I thought like don't get me wrong.
It wasn't just cross cut reverse.
Yeah.
Non-reverse.
Don't get me wrong. There are some good things about this film. There are some nice moments showing how Rey cares for people around her and the other creatures in the universe. You know, like there are some good things in this film, but it's rare that there are these grace notes that kind of elevate it. You can clearly see that J.J. Abrams has some talent. There is a grandeur to this film that sometimes approaches a kind of beauty, but
there's an epic. I mean, in the traditional sense that you see with some of the Kylo Rey specific moments.
Yeah.
But otherwise, not else. Like Endgame, it just kind of strives for this, oh, it's cataclysmic, therefore you must care about it. And I don't care much as the interpersonal relationships, which we've seen develop over three and in some cases many more films.
It was building to a point of grandeur and like true epic scale, I think, where if they stuck the landing, I would have forgiven a lot more about this film. But then it just falls into convention in the worst way in the last final stretch. And, you know, this movie concludes with a big moment of fan service, and I felt nothing.
Yeah. We need to talk about, so as has been widely discussed and publicized, Carrie Fisher is in this. It is her final film. A lot, by necessity of her passing, a lot of her scenes were digitally rendered. I think it was handled in very well and very respectfully. I quite like that.
I think so too. They were very smart with how they reused their existing footage of Leia.
Very much so. There was a flashback sequence involving some of the mainstays of the Star Wars saga, which wasn't so well handled. I think it was actually unnecessary. Mm. It was distracting because it wasn't nearly as well rendered as many of the other sequences. There were also we'll speak about in the broader sense, cameos. One was handled with a sense of grandeur and reverence. I really appreciated their appearance.
Too. Yeah, me too.
The other one, I think they're trying to do something akin to what we've seen with characters returning earlier in the saga. However, this particular performer, honestly, while they were going for a sense of, yes, again, we say it, grandeur, I don't think this performer really came across as caring that much, giving much of a damn, and therefore that sequence didn't land as well as I think J.J. Abrams hoped it would.
I agree.
It just seemed kind of like I'm here.
I'm going to
be a little irreverent about this.
On the subject of these cameos, and also, you know, me sort of giving props before and saying that sometimes this film is moving, there's nothing as moving in this film as the Yoda coming back in The Last Jedi and talking about the burden of being a teacher and how failure is the best teacher of all. Like that, just a simple, beautiful moment that spoke to the philosophy that Rian Johnson was trying to concentrate on in the series. Virat, right before we recorded, made the comment that this is just so philosophically boring in comparison. It's philosophically empty. It's void in comparison.
And that's, I think, part of the frustration of watching this film is the possibility of where this could have gone and where it ends up going.
Yeah.
You know, and there is such a disconnect into, like, you know, what The Last Jedi set up.
Yeah.
And it left you in a very tantalizing place of, like, oh, so Star Wars can actually go in so many new directions. And it doesn't really end up doing that, which is the frustration which I have, I guess, not but just with this film. You're left with this sense of what could have been throughout the whole saga. You know, this kind of...
Yeah. And, you know, kind of in closing, do you guys see much of a future for Star Wars after this?
not for the saga as such. I think if they're going to have to, if we're going to go in the direction of new Star Wars films, they're not going. People aren't going to want an episode 10. They're going to want to see Knights of the Old Republic. They're going to want to see classic Star Wars going back to the early days of the Jedi, exploring this world. Completely different material. Even The Mandalorian is set in the context of the broader saga, as is Rogue One, as is Solo. We're going to have to move wholly away from this, I think, if we're going to get fans renewed or consistently engaged.
I feel like the damage might already be done from how closely this movie stuck to convention. I feel like it's going to be very hard to get people interested in the series when it's ended on, I think, what most people will find to be an anti-climax. And as you say, like, how many... it's spent a lot of films covering this original trilogy and original trilogy homaging timeline and ground. How many chances are people going to get? Even if they break out now and do something original and interesting, will the audience show up? It might need to build momentum over time.
They need a break between... you can't have the Solo Last Jedi type 6 months between movies. They're going to need some time. Absolutely.
Yeah, as we'll see, you know.
Just a couple of things to note about this film.
But they've got Kevin Feige producing one.
Yes.
We'll see.
Just a couple of small notes on some of the performers. Kerry Russell is in this. She's very good. People remember her earliest collaboration with J.J. Abrams in Felicity. Great show from the early 2000s. There's also a number of voice cameos if you stay through the credits, one of which I'm not sure what role they played was Freddie Prinze Jr. So he's in this. He's credited.
He loves Star Wars. I guess it's just a tip of the hat for him.
And yeah, so that is The Rise of Skywalker. It is in cinemas now everywhere for quite a while.
And you should guess who the actors would have been under the Stormtrooper hats, because often they are the people
Daniel
who are famous.
Daniel Craig was one.
I bet there's a bunch of weird cameos in this.
I'm sure there's going to be find revelations. Really?
I heard a rumor that Prince Harry was in one of these.
I could totally see that. I think it's just like, who was near Pinewood Studios?
Oh, actually,
everyone wants to visit a Star Wars set. You know?
Actually, there's something I have to give this film credit for. We were speculating about this off air. I'm glad to see that we weren't wrong about this. In the first film, they hinted at, with the John Boyega character, the first unmasked stormtrooper, that people were disenfranchised and taken away from their homes. Certainly casting a person of color in this role lends the credence to the idea that he is emphasizing that persons of a minority background are disenfranchised in this universe. They hint certainly in this film about disenfranchising more populations around the galaxy. The Last Jedi doesn't touch on this, but this film does. It develops on this and furthers this idea subtly and to some extent. And I appreciated this aspect of world building, which J.J. Abrams did bring back into this trilogy, which Rian Johnson, I'll take its criticism, neglected. He just didn't cover it in The Last Jedi.
By the way,
there's not much world building happening, so I'm glad that the little bit that happened actually kind of worked.
By the way, guys, you know, we haven't read the reviews, but as we're rounding it out, they're coming in. It's very, very mixed. 58% on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie is going to, I think, disappoint at the box office.
It was just funny to watch it coming out of the cinema. Like, half the people were saying, I really liked it. Half were saying, nah, didn't like it. It wasn't vehemently either way, but just people kind of hovering. I think it's going to be extremely mixed.
I think with just the general...
More mixed than divisive.
I think with the general disappointment in Star Wars at the moment that... and the general feeling of burnout, that people are going to be harsher on this than they might have otherwise been. I think people pass a lot of crappy blockbusters, but Knives will be out for this one. Knives Out, by the way. Rian Johnson,
yeah.
Respect.
Yeah. But actually, look...
Episode 9.
And I think that's the point we're trying to make eventually, is the fact that I think at least being bold and going for a divisive movie at least gets a reaction out of you. At least you know where you stand. Where this movie is just kind of meh.
I don't take that point. I don't think trying to be divisive is an end goal of itself.
It should be. Why not?
I just read a blurb on Rotten Tomatoes as you were saying that was saying like that it feels like a shrug of the shoulders. Meh is kind of right because like.
But is that what you should be going
it's
for?
It's the problem of conclusions, you know? When you're wrapping something up, it's so easy for everything to follow the foregone conclusions. And that's exactly what this film does. Are there any genuine
surprises
in this?
Just like Game of Thrones, just like Endgame.
A memorable ending swerves. A memorable ending leaves you something to think about. As I said before, I don't think this really has any theme beyond just regurgitating general themes that have been in the original trilogy.
10 years from now, people will still be watching The Last Jedi. People won't be watching The Force Awakens or this film nearly as much.
10 years from now, people are watching The Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. But honestly, the big problem with this series, I keep saying the big problem, like there's just one, but it's hard to stick the landing. I think the best third installment we've had was, Glenn will strongly disagree, but I think it was Revenge of the Sith, because it was, even though, yeah, that's how the series had to end, it at least felt fresh and different in how dark it went. I'm not saying that this had to have a really, really dark ending, but at least try to give us something we don't expect.
I wasn't a fan of Revenge of the Sith. They put the whole most interesting part of the prequel trilogy, i.e. Darth Vader's ascension and murdering of the younglings, into all of 20 minutes. So that frustrated me. It would be fascinating to do a Star Wars ranking of the 9 films on reflection. I think we're a little too tired. It's a little too early for that now, given we just saw this film. But we'll reflect on it more. We are excited to hear what you think, what audiences think, what your actions are, as they'll soon pour in over the coming days.
We'll enter the new year with finally having some social media. So, you know,
shall we?
Let's do that.
Ooh.
So tell us what you think.
Yeah, and our social tags will be ready. Because I was asked, actually, the person next to me asked me, what is the hashtag you guys use? And I was like, oh, well.
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
I think hashtag Film Fight Club is out there, but if it's not, well, it is, but we'll use that. It's official now.
Yeah. FFC?
That can also work. You know, we're going to, if you're listening to this now and you're wondering what's next from us, go online and listen to the podcast. We're going to talk about Cats at 11. It was weird.
11 a.m., yes.
11 a.m., we'll be releasing that as a podcast.
Yes, it's going to be... Yes, that'll be our Cats podcast. We can't say anything except it's a film set in London involving cats. We can disclose that.
Yeah.
Yep. And but that'll be... Cats is happening. Cats and Star Wars.
What a weekend.
Quite a holiday special. So this has been Glenn Falkenstein, Chris Evans, and Rutt Nehru on Film Fight Club, a very special early edition. Stay tuned for more 2SER programming. Have a wonderful morning. So good morning.
Top of the morning to you.